Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Ursula Rosem, the Green Party candidate for the congressional seat in New York's 24th District. The seat is currently held by Republican Anne Marie Berkel, who defeated Democratic freshman Dan Maffei in 2010. Maffei is now the Democratic challenger in the race. Ursula is an organizer for the Syracuse Peace Council. In the coming weeks, we hope to have interviews with both Dan Maffei and Congresswoman Berkel, in addition to candidates in other races. Ursula, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here. Big fan of the show.
Oh, thank you. Well, a few months back, I had Jill Stein, your party's candidate for president, on the program, and she spoke of, and you've also spoken of, something that you call the Green New Deal. So I was wondering if we could start by having you briefly outline the thrust of the vision of this New Deal and give me, say, three of its most important specific policy planks in your view.
Sure. Well, Jill Stein is really amazing, and we were really happy to have her here in Syracuse a few months ago, and you may have heard that she recently was arrested in Philadelphia protesting foreclosures. And so the Green New Deal is a policy agenda that's put forth by Greens across the country and around the world, and it aims to address the two major crises we're facing right now, the economic crisis and the climate crisis. And it's modeled after FDR's New Deal, which created jobs in a time of depression by creating public jobs to put people back to work. So the premise of the Green New Deal is that instead of people going to the unemployment office, they go to the employment office. It saves us money on public safety net expenditures, and it allows people to get back to work. And it also addresses community needs. And if you look around Syracuse or anywhere, really, there's lots of community needs that are not met. Everyone knows our infrastructure is crumbling. And also, with the Green New Deal, it would be updated for the 21st century, and which would address the biggest crisis that I see in front of us is the climate crisis. And it would basically put people back to work, developing green infrastructure, alternative energy, and also it would create jobs in what I call the caring sector, which is elder care and child care, which are areas that often women and minorities work in, because we know that not everyone wants to get back to work constructing bridges and doing, you know, heavy construction work.
So the obvious question then that comes out of that is, you know, we're in this period now where the deficits have been skyrocketing. There's great concern about national debt. So, obvious question, how are you going to pay for these things in that kind of climate?
Sure, and I think that's a really common question. And I think the answers to many progressives are pretty obvious, and even to people that don't describe themselves as progressive. We have an extremely bloated military budget, larger than any other country in the world, and the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are a significant source of the deficit right now. So cutting back on unmilitary spending, and also fair taxes on corporations and high-income earners, progressive taxes, and increases on higher earning brackets, and also taxing things like capital gains, because the difference between today and when the New Deal was implemented, it was that at that time they were also developing much more progressive tax system to make sure that we could afford to put people back to work. And right now it's an imperative. I think you also, when you invest in public jobs, you're able to stimulate also the private sector, really, because, you know, someone goes back to work through a public jobs program, all of a sudden they have money that they can spend in the private sector economy. But yeah, progressive taxes and cutting the military budget, I think, are two of the key ways that we would pay for the Green New Deal.
Do you have an idea of how far you would take the rate for the top earners in terms of taxes with this idea?
Well, I think that we need to have graduated brackets right now. And so I think that there was a point that I forget the years, but that if you made over $4 million, people were paying up to 90% of taxes on that. And so I think it would discourage the kind of hoarding that we have right now of profits in our society.
So it sounds like you'd take it pretty far up there then.
Well, I think, and it would be, like, for example, right now the conversation that we're hearing is about the Bush tax cuts. And the President Obama has proposed that anyone over $250,000 wouldn't receive any more tax cuts. And then, you know, even my opponent, Dan Maffei, and the senators from New York are saying that it should be over $1 million you don't receive any more tax cuts. So I think it needs to be graduated, and the more you earn, the more you should pay.
Well, I wanted to follow up on something you just mentioned. You mentioned Dan Maffei. The differences in positions between you and the Republican incumbent, Anne Marie Berkel, are pretty stark, given what you've just outlined. But what are the most important differences that you see between you and the Democratic challenger for this seat, Dan Maffei?
Well, I think the biggest difference is the same difference that is between me and Dan Maffei and Anne Marie Berkel, is that they're not offering real specific solutions to these big crises that we're facing. For example, you go on his website and there isn't even a section about energy and climate change is a serious issue, and energy consumption and production are also major issues. And so I think the biggest difference between myself and him is, you know, that I think my platform offers some solutions to problems that people are seeing and feeling and concerned about. And also the fact that as a Green, I don't take campaign contributions from any corporations. And, you know, and that's the difference also is between me and Dan Maffei, and also me and Dan Maffei and Anne Marie Berkel.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Ursula Rosem, the Green Party candidate for New York's 24th Congressional District. Well, I asked you to distinguish some things between yourself and Dan Maffei. I have the same question for the presidential administration. What are the most important differences between you and the most important criticisms that you'd make of the Obama administration so far?
Well, as someone that in 2008 found themselves excited about candidate Obama, I have a number of criticisms. The first was that I felt very sold out and betrayed with what happened with healthcare, and that, you know, even during the campaign, I wished that he was proposing single payer as the solution to healthcare. But then when in 2009, even the public option was taken off the table, that was a betrayal. And then also on climate issues, I think that his endorsement of natural gas drilling as, you know, a solution to our energy needs is frightening, considering what we've seen that's happened around the country in places that have had gas drilling. And because of the contribution to greenhouse gas emissions that hydrofracking, you know, will contribute. So I think that those are my two biggest criticisms, is that it doesn't look like he's offering a solution to the climate crisis. He has this everything's on the table energy policy. And I think a lot of people like myself that worked on campaigns in 2008 feel like they were misled. And so there's a profound feeling of betrayal among a lot of people.
So regarding the healthcare situation, so where would you go from here? Because we've had, at least for this country's history, a pretty extensive reform package that was pushed forward. So where would you go from here? Would you try to build from that to make it more toward your vision, or would you scrap that and try to start over and push something more radical?
I wouldn't want to repeal the current healthcare package that's passed, the Affordable Care Act. We recognize that there's certain provisions there that will help people. Like, for example, expanding access to all types of contraceptions for women. I think that's very important. So I think we have to remember that we're moving forward. And I remember when the Supreme Court decision passed, some people were asking me, well, you don't like the Affordable Care Act. Why are you celebrating at rallies with Affordable Care Act supporters? And what doesn't get talked about enough is that the people that come out and celebrate the Affordable Care Act also say that eventually they want single payer. They want universal health care, and they want it to be available to everyone. And so I think that's we have to move forward and build something better.
And to go back to the country's fiscal health, you know, you mentioned before that you were a proponent then of introducing more progressive taxes and raising the rates on wealthier earners and higher income earners, and then also cutting back on the defense budget. So are there other things that you would be advocating in order to try to address the short-term and the long-term challenges to the fiscal health of the nation?
Well, one thing that I talk to with a lot of voters is with what we have, we call it the Economic Bill of Rights. That's a big part of our program. And that one of the elements of the Economic Bill of Rights is tuition-free higher education. And Jill Stein talks about this as well, that when we invested in education through the GI Bill, there was like a 1 to 7, for every dollar invested, there was a $7 return in output and productivity for people that took advantage of education through the GI Bill. And in addition to that, I think there's lots of conversation now about the student debt crisis in our country. And I think forgiving student debt the way we bailed out banks a couple of years ago, I think could also free up a lot of spending power that the millions of us that do have student debt, there's a lot of constraints right now. You know, we can't buy homes, we can't start families, because there's, you know, a few hundred dollars a month, every month that are being used that we're spending to pay off our debt. And so, and it's not just young people that are feeling the crushing burden of student debt. It's over $1 trillion that we owe now in education debt. And I know people that are, you know, approaching retirement age that are still paying off their student debt. So I think that forgiving student debt could also stimulate the economy in the long run.
Well, that leads exactly into the other question I wanted to ask you on this general topic, in that the forgiving of the student debt then will be essentially a government expense, because those loans are guaranteed, and so the government is going to come back in, and I would assume under your plan then make whole the folks that lent that money in the first place. So we're talking about more money coming out from government. So are there some kinds of entitlements that you think need to be cut back? I pushed your colleague Jill Stein on this too, because I'm not sure that you're going to be able to get to where you're trying to go just by cutting defense spending. So are there some kind of entitlements that you would cut back in order to restore the country's fiscal health?
Well, I think I personally don't like the word entitlements. I think that it's a word that's been I think of it as a spin word that makes it think that some people feel they're entitled to something. And so I don't think we should be thinking about how to make sure that we can meet our responsibility to our people rather than where can we cut back, because a lot of people in this country right now, you really can't cut back anymore on, you know, if you have the lowest cost health care if you can barely afford health care, if you can't find work right now. So for example, I don't think we should be raising the Social Security age, or we shouldn't be raising the age that you can receive Medicare. So I don't think we should be cutting back on entitlements, but we have to think creatively. And I think that's something that we also learned from the New Deal, is what kind of actions can government do that are positive actions that help more people, rather than thinking of how can we save money. Instead of that kind of thinking, I think we need how can we for the long run help more people.
Well, I think we can agree that the chances are not great that you'll be taking the oath of office next January. So can you tell me what other aims your campaign has?
Well, one of the aims is to restore people's faith in politics. There's so many people that I talk to that think our political system is a system of legalized bribery, and I agree with them, and I think it's wrong and it has to be changed. And so, you know, there's this dirty, often political party is seen as this dirty word. So it's a big thing we try to work through with new voters, or especially younger voters, or people that feel really disenfranchised with the political system. So a large aim of our campaign is meeting folks and letting them know that you can have a party that stands for something, basically.
And your candidacy brings up a whole host of questions about the political process, and it introduces, I think, some tricky questions for the voters, and I wanted to explore some of those. First of all, if you are elected, Will you try to caucus with the Democrats in Congress?
I don't think so.
So you will be your own party, in a sense, your own a party of one there.
Well, I think I would have to. I'd have to ask Bernie Sanders for some advice because I do really like him. So, and maybe I would consider discussing this with other with progressive Democrats. I'm sure that they've had their own head scratching and agony about staying in their party. So, what would they do? And of course, I would ask Howie Hawkins for advice.
And the other question related to this is, you know, you've been talking about, I think, some pretty big national issues and some pretty broad visions about taking the country in a different direction and moving policy in a different direction. So, again, if you're elected, do you have any idea of how you're going to allocate your own attention and your staff between trying to move these big questions and then attending to constituency service and more local concerns? How would you divide that up?
Well, everyone's telling me that Jim Walsh had really excellent constituent services. So I think even though we probably don't agree on lots of issues, I would want to ask for, you know, I would want to have the best constituent services possible. And I think that with my background in organizing and having to work with people on a day-to-day basis, I would hope to develop a local team that I can trust, but also taking advice from people that have had to done this in the past. And I think that here locally, I've always heard that Syracuse is very indicative of what's happening in other parts of the country. And so I think that the struggles that people have here in Syracuse are very similar to, you know, the kinds of things that we would deal with in Congress. And I hope that, you know, locally, you know, the hydrofracking, anti-hydrofracking movement is very strong. So I would be, I think it'd be important to have a voice in Congress for a national ban on unconventional fossil fuel extractions. So I think that that is something that I would bring to Congress that is unique, because right now it doesn't seem like we're hearing anything out of Congress about moving away from this kind of big destructive energy extraction.
And for some voters, here's the real rub, and I'm sure that you knew this question was coming. It's the Nader question. Let me set this up, though. The voters most predisposed to vote for you, I think, are likely to be the progressive voters, and you've already said as much. And this race for the 24th seat is looking like it could once again be very close between the two main party candidates. And so a substantial, though even small, number of votes for you could very well make the difference here. So what do you say to a voter who is frustrated with the status quo and drawn to some of your positions, but concerned not to help reelect Anne Marie Berkel by voting for you?
Greens have been the boogeyman for too long, and how long is it going to take till we actually vote for people that who have policies that we like and that we want to represent us? And I think the politics of fear hasn't really gotten us anywhere, and neither of my opponents presents clear solutions to these big crises that we're facing. Neither one of them, you know, has a plan to really address the economic crisis in a way of how are they going to put over 20 million unemployed or underemployed people back to work? How are we going to address the climate crisis? How are we going to cut back on our international empire building and all this waste that's going on in the military? I mean, both of them, for example, support the use of U.S. unmanned drones around the world and throughout the Middle East. So I know that there's differences between Anne-Marie Berkel and Dan Maffei, but I think it's a difference of degree, and that's what people have to be, I think, understand, is that the thing with Anne-Marie Berkel is at least you know who you're dealing with, and you know that she represents an extreme element in the Republican Party. And with Dan Maffei, I think he also represents a very corporate wing of the Democratic Party that also isn't willing to stand up to the leadership that still supports hydrofracking, that supports U.S. empire building and use of unnecessary force overseas. So I tell people that vote for what you want, and we're building a movement that is going to be stronger than this legalized bribery that we see in our political system right now. And also, I think it's important to remember that 4 years ago, there were about 100 million people that didn't come out to vote. So I think that that's who my campaign is talking to. We're talking to people that feel disenfranchised by the political system because politics, as usual, doesn't represent them. We're talking to young people that are concerned about where our future is going, that don't see either of my opponents really presenting a plan to address the climate crisis. So I think what frustrates me is the way that people feel entitled to someone's vote, based because, and that's the strongest case I hear for my opponent, Dan Maffei. And I like to be positive and lay out a positive agenda. But the strongest argument I've heard for supporting him is that he's not Anne Marie Burkle, and that's not a really convincing argument. And I think there's a lot of people that would sit this one out.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is the Green Party candidate for the 24th Congressional District, Ursula Rosem. Well, tell me about the work that you do when you're not running for Congress.
Well, when I'm not running for Congress, I'm really good at creating projects or campaigns for myself to work on. I live in a collective house in the Westcott neighborhood, and so I spend a lot of my free time doing things like drywall or working in the garden. Through the Peace Council for the past 4 years, I've been working with a summer youth bike program called Bikes for Peace that we help youth learn how to fix up their bikes, and we recycle bikes. For the past 4 years, I've also been active in Latin America solidarity work. I'm part of the National Colombia Support Network. I've been to Colombia and El Salvador, Colombia 3 times and El Salvador once, on delegations to learn about the effects of U.S. foreign policy in those countries. And so really foreign policy is how I became more interested in politics and activism and organizing. When I'm not running for office, I find a pile of other things that I find useful and important to be doing.
Well, finally, we have the 3 questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Real Solutions Can't Wait.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Well, anyone who knows me knows that I spend a lot of time looking for my keys. So misplacing my car keys and my house keys and my office keys.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Running for Congress.
Well, that was Ursula Rosem. Ursula, thanks so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.